In a reversal last week, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and 10 other Republicans helped Democrats raise the debt ceiling, for now. The move sparked criticism of McConnell from members of his own party, and it kicked the next debt ceiling fight just weeks down the road to early December. It's the week in Washington. We'll talk about that story and why political watchers have their eye on next month's race for governor in Virginia. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about Republicans and Democrats coming together last week to raise the debt limit for a little while? Are you nervous about the next debt ceiling fight right around the corner? Is this a way to run things with these frequent near flirtations with a shutdown or some sort of default? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Francesca Chambers is the White House correspondent for McClatchy. Francesca, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we get to those stories I just mentioned, you are fresh out of a White House event, I understand, from the president talking about our supply chain. What did we hear?
Well, we did hear the president say that they would now be running those ports 24/7, essentially trying to save Christmas, as some people have put it, telling people that they would be able to get their goods and services, including toys, in time for Christmas. And so good news, potentially, for kids around the country.
All right. Now on to our planned program here, Francesca. We had this debt ceiling standoff, yet another one. We've had a lot of these over the years. We saw Senate Minority Leader McConnell, as I mentioned, change his tune, help raise the debt ceiling for now. After all, what do we know about that change of mind?
Well, here's where it comes down as to whether or not Republicans did or didn't help Democrats raise the debt ceiling. What they voted to do was to help overcome a procedural hurdle that would allow a vote to move forward on the debt ceiling. So that vote itself took place along party lines, 50-48. Even since then, however, McConnell has said that he won't help the White House and Democrats again if they reach that December 3rd date in which they expect the money to run out again. He said that to a letter in President Joe Biden.
Right. That's a more accurate way to phrase it. They voted to stop preventing Democrats, in effect, from raising the debt ceiling. Is that a better portrayal?
Well, they voted to not allow a filibuster or end a filibuster, however you want to put it, keep a filibuster from taking place. And so they did not vote for the extension of the debt limit. They just said, hey, we're going to move out of the way.
McConnell got some criticism from people in his own party on this, including former President Donald Trump. Here's what the former president said at a rally in Iowa over the weekend.
And to think that we had 11 Republicans go along with an extension... headed up by Mitch McConnell. Can you believe that? Mitch McConnell. 11 Republicans. And you know what it does? It gives the Democrats more time, 2 months, gives them more time to figure it out. They can now have 2 more months to figure out how to screw us, okay?
So Mitch McConnell has figures, including the former president, looking over his shoulder on decisions like this. You've been thinking about this, Francesca. What can you tell us about some of the pushback we saw?
Well, there has been pushback besides Donald Trump within the Republican Party. It was primarily, it's worth noting, Republican leadership in the Senate that voted in favor of allowing Democrats to be able to pass a debt ceiling lift. And so it would also included members who are retiring. So they are maybe not as concerned, some of those members, about what the former president of the United States has to say about them, because they will not be running again. But importantly, McConnell did say to the president and to the White House that when it comes to December 3rd, the new date for when this would run out, he is not going to help them. Republican leadership will not help them. And so they're going to have to come up with their own plan for how they would extend it beyond that time frame.
And the politics of this is kind of weird, Francesca, because as I understand it, nobody actually wants the U.S. government to default on their debt. Nobody in leadership, I think most of Congress, would say, yeah, we don't want to risk this possible economic calamity. The idea here is, though, that come December, Democrats will have to figure out a way to do it on their own through some sort of reconciliation, right? What's the politics behind that?
Well, part of what this is, too, is is potentially a misunderstanding about what lifting the debt ceiling actually does. Mm-hmm. Now, there is an argument from Republicans that they don't want to pay for any new spending that President Biden and his party could enact as part of their spending bill, the reconciliation bill that they're trying to work out now. But what the debt ceiling lifting it would do is it would allow the country to pay its past bills, its prior bills. And this is a push that the White House is really making, is to say, no, this is previous spending. This really has nothing to do with the reconciliation bill and trying to separate those two things out in an effort to try and get more Republicans on board.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Michael is with us in Appleton. Michael, hi.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. I think the guest is bringing up some really good points. I was just calling to say that I think ridiculous of Republicans and very Machiavellian to play chicken with the debt ceiling and whether or not they'll allow Democrats to pass a measure to raise it, especially considering the fact that they have passed it multiple times, raised it multiple times before under Republican-controlled administrations, and they are only recalcitrant to pass it when they can make it look like it was the Democrats' fault.
Michael, thanks for the call. Francesca, Michael taking a long view of the politics of these debt-ceiling games of chicken, he called it.
And importantly, we've been talking about the Senate, but in the House of Representatives, the bill also passed along a party line vote. It was House Democrats who voted to lift the debt ceiling with House Republicans standing in opposition to that. So also important to note that this has become very political, as you were saying before, between Republicans and Democrats.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Francesca Chambers from McClatchy about some of the big stories in national politics. We'll get to have more debt ceiling discussions come December or in late November, I guess. Francesca, I want to move on now to a race in Virginia, a governor's race in Virginia. You don't see a lot of elections in these odd numbered years. Why is this getting so much national political attention?
Well, after the victory of Governor Gavin Newsom in California, Democrats were riding high. And now when you look at Virginia, which with President Biden, you know, won by 10 points, but not nearly the 30 points that he won California in the last election, the race has become much closer. And it's really proving to be a test potentially for 2022 in the midterm elections to see how Democratic messaging will work out. And you have seen Terry McAuliffe, the Democratic candidate there, he has made comments about President Biden and his popularity in the state of Virginia. And he has made it quite clear he's getting a little nervous about his race in the context of this infrastructure debate and the reconciliation bill that we were just talking about. He has made it clear that he feels that it would be better for his race if they could go ahead and get that legislation passed. But the deadline, or rather a target date for Democrats for that, is October 31st, which cuts it quite close to Election Day in November in Virginia.
And you've been following some big names showing up or planning to show up in Virginia to try to swing things. Who is visiting?
Well, we know for sure that former President Barack Obama will be coming out to campaign for Terry McAuliffe in Virginia. Now, this is very important because Democrats see Hispanic voters and Black voters as being very important to turning out in Virginia, not just for this race, but for the midterms across the country. They believe that if they can get turnout from their base, then that is what will decide these elections in favor of Democrats. And so the former president, Barack Obama, heading to one of the key areas in which Terry McAuliffe would need to turn out Black voters, the Richmond area.
4 years ago, big Democratic wins in Virginia kind of raised hopes for Democrats of House and Senate majorities. Maybe a year later, signs of maybe an impending blue wave. Are people going to be looking at whatever the outcome here is as a sign of things to come in 2022?
They will absolutely be looking at it that way, particularly because even as you look at the breakdown of the state where they have Democratic senators and Joe Biden again won the election in Virginia quite handily by double digits, you still have a situation where, for whatever reason, capturing the gubernatorial races have been harder for Democrats in the state. And so that will be one reason why they'll be looking to see what messages they can glean from this potentially for Democrats as they try to compete in 2022 on some of these same messages.
Talking to Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent for McClatchy. She is with us today for a weekly roundup of the top stories in Washington. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Related to our talk about Virginia there, are you watching that race? And do you have hopes or fears for which party might have the momentum going into 2022? Do you think Democrats can keep their slim majorities and basically tie in the Senate? Do you think things will swing the other way? What issues are on your mind as we're heading into those elections next year? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our look at the top stories in national politics. Francesca Chambers is with us from McClatchy. You could join in at 800-642-1234. A couple questions for you. What issues are at the top of your mind as we head into the 2022 election season? And coming up in just a few moments, we'll check out a Biden administration policy saying federal agencies should look at the impact of plans, of rules on women and on gender inequality. Do you think that's something you want the federal government to be focused on? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Francesca, before we move on from prospects for Virginia and for elections in 2022, is there a sense among Democrats that, hey, they could lose the House and or Senate next year for their big projects, their infrastructure bills, for example? It's now or never. Is that lending some sense of urgency to them?
That is part of the reason there's a sense of urgency that if they lose they could potentially lose the House and Senate, so they wouldn't be able to do it down the line. But the reverse is also true. Democrats also think that if they don't accomplish something, they don't get infrastructure passed or some of these programs, then they won't have anything to take to the voters in order to be able to ask them to vote for them again. So it's a little bit of a double-edged sword in that way.
Now, infrastructure, we've been waiting on infrastructure bills for years, way before the Biden administration. Seemed like some things were closing in on votes, and then timelines went back. What is the latest, Francesca, on when these two separate infrastructure packages, the, you know, more traditional infrastructure and the human infrastructure, as the Biden administration has called it, where are we on those right now?
Well, it continues to be infrastructure week in Washington, as we like to say. And now we have the Senate that's out of session this week. And so you could expect to see negotiations next week start to get a little bit more robust. But even with the Senate being out, we did hear from Senator Bernie Sanders, who is helping to lead these negotiations in the Senate as the budget committee chair, say yesterday that the time is now, that the time is up. He called out Senators Manchin and Sinema by name to report, saying that they need to decide which programs they want to cut and which programs they'd be willing to see in the spending bill in order to get down to the amount that Senator Manchin specifically says that he would like to see.
And how drastic, how big are the cuts from that $3.5 trillion over 10 years? That's been the number for quite a while now.
We don't know the answer to that yet because the White House has said they don't want to negotiate in public. So it's unclear whether or not we'll see something like a sunset for some of the programs in which they'd last less than 10 years in order to cut the price tag, or if some programs that the president proposed will just be cut from the bill entirely.
Talking to Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent for McClatchy. It's our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. Francesca, I want to spend some time on a piece that you wrote. You've been following this gender policy council story from the Biden administration. What kind of things are we hearing there?
So the Gender Policy Council, which President Biden established in March of this year, and it was the first council of this type that reports directly to a president, although there have been similar initiatives in the past to a lesser extent, is he had called on it to create a strategy for gender equality and equity. And that council has now turned in the strategy and it will be released within weeks. What does the strategy say? Well, they will direct federal agencies to put gender front and center in their policymaking processes. Now, how exactly they'll go about that can be up to the agencies. the White House will give them a blueprint for how they could do these things, but the agencies will have to identify which policies in which they think there is gender inequality and other areas in which they think that they could make improvements. It'll be up to them to make those decisions about policy.
So the why and the how, or the how and the what, are still a little fuzzy. What's the why? What are the reasons that the Biden administration is giving for having this focus on gender impacts of rules?
Well, the reason the White House says that this is important is because the policies can potentially negatively affect women if that question isn't being asked in the first place, which is how will this policy impact women? But the White House has also said a focus of its work from the very beginning would be some of these issues that the Gender Policy Council is touching on. Those would include pay equity and also women's unemployment at this time. So there are other things that the Gender Policy Council is also working on, including violence against women.
And a foreign policy comes up in this, too. This is not just a domestic issue, right?
That's right. Foreign policy and trade. And the reason those two things come up is this. In foreign assistance, there are groups that are working with the White House say that you could give more money or direct more money to women's groups in other countries. The other reason it comes up when it comes to trade is the idea of whether or not there should be preferential treatment for countries that do not discriminate against women in their laws. So there's a lot of different areas in which, once the strategy itself is given to agencies, that the agencies could then say, here are the areas in which we want to focus on. And then after that comes about the hard work of changing those policies all around.
And then you also wrote about concerns from some advocacy groups that they, you know, this might sound nice, there aren't a lot of resources that they can point to going into that. What did you hear in response from this Gender Policy Council in the White House?
Well, the White House says that they think that they're well-resourced. At the same time, they're also looking to expand the number of people that they have. But advocates are concerned that all this work, when we talk about the issues, and we're talking foreign policy, trade, extensively when it comes to domestic issues too, including into paid family leave, childcare, any number of issues, that the council and the number of staffers it has is being spread too thin potentially to work on all of the things that the president said in the executive order he would like to see them work on, but also the council has been telling advocates in their conversations that they would be tackling also.
So when might we in the public see an impact from this effort?
Well, it could be years for the entire strategy to be implemented. While it could be as early as this month before we see the strategy, then the agencies, again, will have to come up with their own plans to identify which things that they'd like to work on and then put those processes and the implementation into place. But the Gender Policy Council already has been helping the White House with its response to the Texas abortion law. And one of the things that has helped with there is coordinating with the Department of Justice, the White House Counsel's Office, and the Health and Human Services Department, for one.
One more story you tweeted about today, Francesca, on the vaccine mandate through the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, requiring a lot of workplaces to require vaccines. It came up at a press conference today, it sounds like, on the timing, when that's going to actually kick in, which I think a lot of people are pretty interested in. What do we and don't we know at this point?
Businesses also want to know when that's going to kick in. Mm-hmm. So what we do know at this point is that it's been submitted for review, the rule that OSHA has put together that the president previewed. And it's now with the Office of Management and Budget at the White House, which is reviewing it. And as the White House said today, we're probably and unfortunately going to all find out at the same time what's in the rule, because it will be posted publicly to the Federal Register and we'll all be able to see it by refreshing.
So what stories are you watching for now over the next week or two, Francesca? Senate out of session, you mentioned, but still a lot going on.
Well, the Senate will be coming back into session early next week. And so what we'll be watching for is whether or not they can come to a deal. Democrats can come to a deal on this spending bill. And importantly, even if they do come to a deal, what is in it? Which programs stay? Which programs go? How long do they last? There's still a number of unanswered questions about that. And largely in Washington, until those questions are answered, a lot of things are frozen.
And I've heard skepticism and optimism about whether something is going to come out of this. Just from your sense, and there's a lot of moving parts, I know, Francesca, are we going to end up with an infrastructure bill or two infrastructure bills? Or what are the chances of it all falling apart still?
Well, the two bills would have to move together from everything that I'm hearing from Democrats. If you have the bipartisan infrastructure bill, then you're also going to have some other secondary spending bill that's passed only by Democrats and includes other parts of the president's agenda. But it's very up in the air right now as to what that second bill will include. Now, one thing that progressives and the president are united on is they do not want to cut climate change provisions. So those look to be one thing that you can likely count on to be in that. But there is disagreement beyond that about what is essential to put in this bill and what the president and his party could potentially try to tackle later.
Francesca, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking to Francesca Chambers. She's the White House correspondent for McClatchy, and she joined us today for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics.